While we wait for the plume of white smoke from the Sistine Chapel that will signal the selection of a new pope, we're going to explore the future of the Catholic Church in Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Pope Benedict XIV was the first pope in nearly 600 years to retire from the papacy. He leaves at a time when the Catholic Church has been tainted by ongoing revelations about sexual abuse of children by priests. This hour, we're going to talk about how the challenges that have faced the Church worldwide affect Catholics in Iowa, and how Iowa's changing population affects the future of the Church in our state. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. This past Thursday at 8 p.m. Vatican time, Pope Benedict XVI retired from the papacy. He was the first pope to retire in nearly 600 years, and he left at a time when the Catholic Church has been tainted by ongoing revelations about sexual abuse of children by priests and cover-ups that have damaged the reputations of many cardinals in the Church. There are a lot of questions about the future of the Catholic Church right now and this hour. That's what we're going to talk about, the future of the Catholic Church around the world and also the future of the Catholic Church in Iowa. And we want to hear from you this hour. What are your feelings about the future of the Catholic Church? How has the sex abuse scandal impacted your feelings? And what are you hoping for with the new pope? You can join our conversation by email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we're going to talk to a lot of different people this hour. To start off the conversation, Monsignor Larry Beeson is here. He's vicar of retired priests, and he spent his career in the Des Moines Diocese. With the exception of 3 years, he spent studying in Rome. Monsignor Beeson, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome, indeed. I'm glad to be here.
Also with us is Christy Nabhan Warren. She is an associate professor of religious studies at the University of Iowa. Hello, Christy.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today. And Monsignor Beeson, I want to start with you. And of course, right now, the thing that everyone is focusing on is that the Pope has stepped down and there will be a conclave very soon, within the next week or so, and in the near future, we're going to know who the new pope will be. What's going on in Rome right now?
It's really an exciting time. This morning, they had the first of the meetings of the cardinals that have gathered together. They want to set the time, you know, the date for the conclave. That's not established yet, but some of the cardinals have not yet arrived, and they all have to be there in order to vote on the date of the beginning of the conclave. There's a meeting this morning, and there's a meeting this afternoon about 5 o'clock Rome time, and they'll be discussing all of the details that go into electing the new pope. So it's a busy time for the cardinals that are there.
How many cardinals will be involved in the conclave?
In the conclave, it's 115 cardinals that will actually be voting. There are many more cardinals than that, but they're over 80 and retired, so they're not able to vote in the conclave. It's over 200 cardinals, but just 115 of them are under 80, and so they will be eligible to vote for the new pope.
And what goes on, or do we know what goes on during the conclave?
During the conclave, there's a secrecy is imposed so that there cannot be outside pressures on the cardinals as they select the new pope. They're not to listen to the excuse me, the radio, television, the internet. All of those things are forbidden so that they are free. If you know the history of the church in the past, there have been pressures, outside pressures, indicating who should be elected pope, and they're trying to eliminate all of that. So they have secrecy. But the cardinals themselves are free to move about. They have a nice place that they live, the Casa Sante Marte, that was built by John Paul II so that they would have a good place to stay. They used to just kind of camp out in the chapels of the Vatican in a very makeshift sort of arrangements, and now they have real motel rooms with hot and cold running water and all of those, you know, niceties. And so they only have 2 votes in the morning, 2 votes in the afternoon each day, so it leaves other time for a time for prayer and meditation. But I'm sure there's lots of conversations that'll go along, too, at that time.
And are there cardinals who stand for pope, who say, I would like to become pope, or do they have to be nominated by someone else?
Well, that's a good question. And they will, we use the word vet nowadays. They'll vet one another with the questions that they ask about certain issues that are going on in the church. There's going to be two talks given about the problems that face the church today, not by cardinals, but the first one today is by Father Cantalamessa, and he'll be talking about, the various issues that face the church, and then there'll be another talk. I don't know who's giving the other talk today, but during the course of the preparations for the conclave, they have these two talks.
And what language will all of these negotiations take place in?
Well, that's another very important question as well, because the popes so far have been fluent in Italian. They're able to handle the Italian language, but obviously not all the cardinals there are going to be fluent in Italian, so they'll be discussing with one another, probably in English and some of the Spanish, some of the other languages that are used throughout the world today. The official language in the conclave is Latin. The vote says "eligo," which is the word for "I choose." But they have to get along with whatever they can do language-wise.
Right. Well, and there was a comment made when Pope Benedict announced his retirement. He made that announcement in Latin, that a number of the cardinals actually missed it.
That's right.
Because
I watched
they didn't understand
the presentation, and I've studied Latin a long time in my life. So as I listened to it, I was thinking to myself, well, would I really understand that when he said that? Correct. Yes.
And of course, with all of this secrecy, do they have translators that they can bring in, or would they be excluded?
They don't allow anybody in but the cardinals themselves once the conclave begins. They have the word exeunt omnes, and that means everybody out. And so it's just the cardinals that are there. And I don't know the answer to that question. Obviously, many of the cardinals are bilingual because of the circumstances from which they come.
Certainly.
And so they could kind of gerrymander so that one would speak one language, another language.
Well, Christy, I want to bring you into the conversation.
Sure.
And, of course, there are a lot of questions right now as people who are non-Catholics even are discussing,
yes,
who should be the next pope. Can you familiarize us with some of the big questions that people are asking right now?
Absolutely. There's a lot of questions that are being asked. And I think, for better or worse, I'll focus on Catholics in the United States. This is sort of my area of specialization as a researcher. Catholics are really, some are really worried. They're really worried, I think. Catholics who identify themselves as conservatives would very much like to see a pope that's very much in line with the Pope Emeritus. Other Catholics are really hoping to see some changes, questioning things such as, revisiting celibacy, papal celibacy. Some priests themselves are starting to wonder about that, asking questions about increased involvement for women in the church. And so I think there's a lot of hope for change as much as there is hope for maintaining the status quo. And so from a scholarly perspective, someone who's on the outside looking in, as what I would call myself, an intimate outsider to all this, I'm very much looking forward to seeing what happens, as are my students at the University of Iowa. So,
and Monsignor Beeson, of course, that is something that we hear about a lot in the media. We say, okay, popes have been European for the most part,
yeah,
or maybe
right,
even exclusively. And there are many Catholics around the world. What do you think the odds are that there could be a pope who hails from somewhere else in the world?
Well, it definitely is a possibility that it could be somebody from another part of the world, because the large number of Catholics in South America and a large number of Catholics in Africa and a large number of Catholics in Asia, and the pope is you know, named cardinals from all of those places. They'll be in the conclave, and I'm sure that they will be weighing in on exactly what's going to go on here in the future.
Now, of course, I remember those conversations when the last pope was chosen, and then we had a pope who came from Germany. How likely do you think it is that there could be a pope from another part of the world?
Well, you know, it's always hard to predict, but, you know, in the last election, Pope John Paul II, we call him Blessed John Paul II, was pope for 25 years, and he had really set the church in a certain direction, and Cardinal Ratzinger, who was then elected pope, you know, after him, was definitely a part of that whole picture. They used to meet every week. He knew the thoughts of the pope, and when he was at the pope's funeral, he emerged really as a big figure, someone that would continue the legacy of John Paul II, and I think it was kind of a, you know, it's a relatively short conclave. And but if this conclave goes long, then you'll begin to think that, well, maybe it might be a pope from another country because of the fact that they might be thinking, looking at certain issues and some of these that have been mentioned already by Christy, that that they'll be talking about all of this.
And Christy, of course, right now in Europe and in the United States, the Catholic Church, growth in the Catholic Church is pretty stagnant, mm-hmm. although mm-hmm. in South America and in Mexico and in Africa, the Catholic Church is growing by leaps and bounds. And the places where it's growing in the United States are because of immigrants coming into the United States. Do you think, how different do you think these two Catholic churches are, the one that is growing and the one that has sort of been holding steady?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, Charity. I think in many ways, if we look at Catholicism in the United States, you know, from a historical perspective, it's always had its own its issues have been in line with Rome, but it's also had its own sort of peculiar issues as well. And in many ways, many scholars say it's become sort of its own church, sort of within a larger global church. So yeah, absolutely, you're right. I mean, when we see growth areas, you know, we see some converts to the Roman Catholic faith, but those numbers tend to be fairly small. But it's mostly among Latinos, Mexican Americans, Puerto Ricans, Filipinos, Vietnamese, and particularly among Latinos, we find growth in these parishes, primarily because of higher birth rates. But you're absolutely right. Compared to places such as Latin America, developing nations, Africa, Latin America, the numbers are fairly small, even stagnant in the United States. And that's a real issue for the church.
Monsignor Beeson, the fact that the Pope stepped down right now, so close to Easter and a very important time for the Catholic Church, was that significant?
Well, I think it was significant. Definitely, you know, breaking the long tradition, 600 years, and of sports, especially following Blessed John Paul II, who had Parkinson's disease and carried it out clear to the very end of his life. It was, you know, we all have those images in our mind of the mm-hmm. Pope struggling to carry out his work. And when Pope Benedict looked at that, I was wondering, maybe he thought, well, should the church go through this? And he gave the reasons for himself stepping down. He said it was with a great deal of prayer. But it's kind of like, I'm old, I'm tired, and I'm going to resign. So.
We're going to continue this conversation in a moment. We're talking about the future of the Catholic Church around the world and the future of the Catholic Church in Iowa. Monsignor Larry Beeson is here. Please stay with us. And Christy Navon Warren is an associate professor of religious studies at the University of Iowa. She will stay with us as well. And we want to hear from you. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. As we all know, if we've been paying any attention to the news over the past few weeks, Pope Benedict XVI has resigned. He stepped down last Thursday. The papacy is vacant right now, and the conclave has not yet been called, but a new pope will be selected sometime in the next couple of weeks. And this hour, we're talking about the future of the Catholic Church. There are a lot of questions right now about the future of the Catholic Church around the world and here in the state of Iowa as well. With me, Monsignor Larry Beeson. He is vicar of retired priests. He spent his career in the Des Moines Diocese, with the exception of the 3 years he spent studying in Rome. Christy Nabhan Warren is here. She's an associate professor of religious studies at the University of Iowa. She specializes in the American Catholic Church. And I want to welcome a new guest to the conversation, Sister March Clark. She works with NETWORK, a progressive Roman Catholic social justice lobby in Washington, D.C. She's NETWORK's lobbyist on domestic human needs. She participated in the Nuns on the Bus tour that got so much attention not so very long ago, and also once taught at Clark University in Dubuque, Iowa. Hello, Sister Clark.
Hello. It's good to be with you.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And we've been talking a lot about the questions that are being asked right now about the future of the Catholic Church, about the next pope. So I'd love to get your input on that. When you think about who the next pope would be, what are you hoping to see?
Thank you. That's a really good question. I guess one of the first things I think about is I hope that it's a pope who will be listening to the diverse voices within the church, with some very thoughtful openness. I think some of the questions that Christy mentioned a few minutes ago are important ones, and I hope that it will be someone who is open to that. I also hope, and I think this is a change from what I've seen in Pope Benedict, I hope it would be someone who is much more inclusive rather than excluding of people, and who would be more pastoral than concerned about hierarchy in terms of orientation.
Does it matter to you where in the world this pope comes from?
I think it would be a very, very good message to the world and to the church if it is someone who is not from Europe. I think there's many other people whom I've been hearing about who I think have great potential. I'm not particularly interested in any one person, but I do think just an openness to it not being someone from Europe would probably be a very good message.
Well, and I'm
inclusivity of openness.
I mentioned that you were part of the Nuns on the Bus tour. You're part of a progressive Roman Catholic social justice lobby, and these churches in Africa, in South America, in Central America, tend to be more conservative than Catholic churches elsewhere. So when you talk about looking for someone somewhere else in the world to be pope, is that a conflict in your mind?
I don't think so. I guess I'm relying very much on the work of the Spirit. I think openness, not only in the conclave, but an openness to the Spirit on the part of whoever is eventually elected.
Let's turn our conversation to the Catholic Church in the United States now, which is facing a lot of the challenges. The sexual abuse scandal obviously has rocked the Catholic Church in the United States, and also the Catholic Church, where it's growing in the United States, tends to be changing a little bit because there are immigrants who are really driving that growth. What do you see as the greatest challenges right now facing the Catholic Church in the U.S., Sister Clark?
I guess from my perspective, and it's partly because of what I do every day, is a real need for the church to be a very strong voice for social justice. I think that includes things about how we deal with immigrants. It includes how people who have been abused are treated. It includes what happens to people who have been offenders, people who have abused other people. And so I guess that's something I would be very much looking for in our church. I think it's a horrendous thing that so many of the abuses have been covered up. I think that's a sinfulness on the part of the church in the United States. And I would hope that as we move through this, there would be a real, more than just apologies and more than just retribution, that there would be a real accepting humbly the guilt of some of that. And being willing to move forward. I think the church has been trying to work, I think, fairly well with immigrants in this country. I think one of the things that I see is a need to really work to incorporate people of other cultures into the political structures within the church, whether that be parish councils or positions within dioceses, whatever that would be. And I think recognizing some of the cultural differences that would allow the church to be more responsive to immigrant groups.
There are places where we see a lot of growth in Catholic churches among these immigrant groups, where we see kind of a separation, where we see a primarily Latino Catholic church and a primarily Caucasian American Catholic church in the same community. Do you think that that is causing a problem in the United States, Sister Clark?
I guess I look at that two ways. I think that there is a need for people of similar cultures to have and spend time together, but I think the downside of it is we need to learn from each other. I think one of the things I've seen is that cultural differences, some cultures need very particular invitations because they don't necessarily feel themselves to be seen as adequate to take on roles within the church, and so they might be more inclined to pull apart with people who are more like them. I think the more that parishes can work at inviting in, listening to what the cultural needs are, the cultural differences, the better that will be. I'm in a church in Silver Spring, Maryland, and I'm delighted because we have Pakistanis, we have Indians, we have people from island nations in the Atlantic, we have Asians, we have Vietnamese, we have African Americans. We have a great diversity, and that has grown in the last, just within the time that I've been in the parish, it's grown a lot. But I think it's because individuals have reached out and invited people into having a greater voice within the parish.
Monsignor Beeson, what do you see as the greatest challenges facing the Catholic Church in the United States?
I think really in the United States, probably our biggest problem is what's called secularism. You know, we live in a very market-oriented, throwaway society that really, you know, lives for today and has a big problem of living for tomorrow. And so how do you wake people up? How do you get them fired up about the fact that, really as a church we're to spread the gospel? Sister Marge talks about openness to others, that we know that in our parishes that can be a real challenge when you bring in groups from other nations, to make sure, we really try to develop leadership in those groups themselves so that they are setting the agenda rather than we ourselves. And those are our big challenges.
Well, and you mentioned secularism. There are a lot of young people who are leaving all kinds of churches, not just the Catholic Church.
Right.
But
that's right.
What do you think the Catholic Church needs to do to show that it's relevant in the lives of young people?
Well, one of the problems that we have as Catholics is the fact that as a church, what we try to do is conform ourselves to Christ. That's in our theology, that's the basic thing. So that, for example, to try to do contemporary liturgies and all of these sorts of things are not, because we always have to go back into the history books and say, well, how was this done in the second century, and what was the language that was used? All of those sorts of questions. So I don't know. In some ways, that's a difficulty. But I do see, in the youth retreats that are held, we had one in the high school where I lived just this weekend, and you see 200 young people with clergy there that are, really interested in spiritual questions and all of the sacraments, all of the things that we do. And that seems to be a good thing. But as to look at the population as a whole, I don't really have the answer.
Well, and there are a lot of people trying to find that answer, I'm sure. I want to bring Stanley on the line from Fayette into the conversation. Hi, Stanley.
Well, good morning. I just wanted to say that I feel the future of the church lays with the local priests and how they present themselves or act in the community. Now, we're Baptists, but we couldn't always get to the Baptist church 30 miles away, so we started to go to the Catholic church occasionally, and the father walked up one day and said, well, why ain't you here every Sunday? And I says, well, we don't come here every Sunday. And he asked, well, why not? And I said, well, we're Baptists. And he says, well, why do you come here? And I said, well, I just like your sermons. And he's kind of dumbfounded and said, well, you're welcome anytime. And he's a priest that's very active in the community. Kids, if they get out of line, he just got to say one word and they shake right up. And, you know, he works with colleges and just a great man. And being a Baptist, we enjoy listening to his sermons.
Well, that's quite an endorsement, Stanley. Thank you so much for your call. And Monsignor Beeson, maybe the local priests are part of the future or a big part of the future of the church, but there's a lack of priests, right?
Yes, and they're aging, too. That's right. The numbers are down, and the priests are older. And so we rely very much nowadays on the diaconate, you know, that there's other parts of the church that are ordained, and they are supplying some of the some of these places where we are we don't have the numbers, and we are getting older as well too.
All right, and we'll talk more about that in a few minutes as we bring a deacon into the conversation. But first, I want to bring in somebody who is involved with training future priests. Father Ken Anik is a professor of counseling psychology at Divine Word College, a seminary in Epworth, Iowa. Hello, Father Ken.
Hello, Charity. Nice to be with you.
Thank you so much for being with me today. And so you work a lot with the future priests and people who are the future of the Catholic Church, and you find yourself working with people from all over the world, right?
Correct, yeah. We're rather an unusual seminary in Iowa, as I think you would find the average in most seminaries are about 70% white, Caucasian seminarians, and we have a total of one seminarian who's Caucasian, and the rest are from other ethnic groups, Asian, Hispanic, the Caribbean, and Africa.
What has made Divine Word College so attractive to people from all over the world, do you think?
Well, I believe it started back in 1975 with the fall of Vietnam. And at the time, there were a number of immigrants from Vietnam who were seminarians down in Fort Chaffee, and I believe that's in Arkansas. And a priest there, a chaplain, called us and said that he had seminarians who would still like to pursue their studies, and he couldn't find anywhere that was willing to take them. And at the time, we had a brother who was a expert in English, a second language, where he taught that in Taiwan. And we said, yeah, we would take them. And from there, we first developed a very strong Vietnamese community within the college. And then gradually, because of that ESL program and our willingness to accept students from just about every cultural background, that just grew. And it's been growing ever since. And our openness to receive them. And then it's a unique kind of work because you're really working cross-culturally with people with different ways of communicating, different sense of church. And to have a seminary that, you know, teaches the students to be truly inclusive and appreciate cultural differences.
And as you're training these young men, are you training them to go back to their own countries, or are you training them to work elsewhere?
In a way, both. The Divine Word missionaries have a ministry in which in our parishes we work diversely. In other words, you might have one parish with four priests, and they might be from four different nationalities. So we're primarily a mission. And, for example, many of our initial Vietnamese priests work in other countries. We have two on staff now, just came here to teach. Both had been working in Togo, West Africa. And we have some of our other staff members who had been in Latin America. And so the idea of going home isn't really part of their training. It's often to go to a whole third country.
We talked a little bit about the difference between the Catholic Church in the United States and in Europe, and the Catholic Church as it's growing in Africa and Togo, you know, and Southern America and Central America. Do you see a divide?
A divide between
Catholicism in those parts of the world and Catholicism in Europe and the United States?
I think we have to bring in the concept of culture. Like in the United States, we're very much an individualistic culture. you move to other countries that are very collectivistic. I think they look at church very differently. I believe one of the issues that we really face in our country is that real strong individualism, because church really means the people, the community coming together. It doesn't only mean some type of a structure. And the idea of people coming together to work together for common good, to appreciate each other, I think is very much what the church is about in many of the other countries, and not so much in the U.S. And that's where I see the culture kind of gets in the way, as Monsignor mentioned, too, the strong secularism that we see. You don't necessarily see that in Africa, or you don't see that, you know, in Latin America. I think those things do collide.
And we were talking a little while ago about the lack of young priests in the United States, in Europe. And Sister March Clark, why do you think that we're having a difficult time attracting young priests into the Catholic Church?
I think that's a very good question. I don't think I have an answer to it. I think some of the secularization is one of the things. I also think some of the unwillingness of the church structure, the hierarchy, to grapple with some of the justice issues, to grapple with some of the questions of celibacy, of women, some of the things that they're thinking about and grappling with on their own. I work a lot with young people, people in their 20s and 30s, and I've become very aware of people in that age group who are dedicated to bringing about good, are also very concerned about development of community. And I think that flows over into parishes and other things. I'm not sure whether that has an influence on whether people want to become priests or not.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back, and we'll talk more about the future of the Catholic Church around the world and in Iowa in a moment. With me, Sister Marge Clark, Father Ken Anik, Christy Nevin Warren, and Monsignor Larry Beeson. You're also welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We're talking about the future of the Catholic Church around the world and the future of the Catholic Church in Iowa this hour. And you are welcome to join our conversation as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call to share your thoughts. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We have a lot of wonderful people with fascinating insight with us this hour. Monsignor Larry Beeson is here. He's vicar of retired priests in the Des Moines Diocese. He spent his entire career in the Des Moines Diocese, with the exception of the 3 years he spent studying in Rome. Christy Nabhan Warren is here. She's an associate professor of religious studies at the University of Iowa. She specializes in the American Catholic Church. Sister Marge Clark is here. She works with NETWRC, a progressive Roman Catholic social justice lobby in Washington, D.C. She's on the line with us from Maryland today. She has spent a considerable amount of time in Iowa. She taught at Clark University in Dubuque, Iowa, and she also was involved in the Nuns on the Bus tour. And Father Ken Anik is here. He's a professor of counseling psychology at Divine Word College, a seminary in Epworth, Iowa. And now I want to welcome to the conversation Jim Bradovich. He's a deacon for Holy Trinity Church in Beaverdale. He's also a lobbyist at the Capitol. That's his day job. Jim, hello.
Good morning and blessings.
Thank you so much for being here today. And we were just talking about the lack of priests in many parishes around the United States and in Iowa as well. You are a deacon. Can you explain for those of us who aren't familiar with the Catholic Church, what is a deacon?
Sure. You know, I think a lot of folks believe that a deacon is maybe a priest light or someone there who's kind of half priest, half something else. Really, the diaconate actually kind of made its comeback back after World War II. And as the church leaders met after World War II, they saw that the number of priests at that time was down, yet they had a lot of those things that the church really needs to do, and they needed some folks to go out and do that. So the diaconate has developed, and it continues to develop today. What I do is I have a multifunctional role. I have the liturgical role, which is my assisting of the priest during Mass. I also assist in sacraments, whether it be performing baptisms or weddings or funerals. But I also have and am charged with service to the community. So we're supposed to bring the love of God out to the community in acts of service, whether it be involved in charity, whether it be food, clothing, shelter. I also do things like hospital and hospice visits and walk with folks, you know, especially in a hospice situation, to have the honor to walk with someone and their family during those last weeks and days here during their earthly life. You know, those are some of the things to which the diaconate is doing within the church today.
What did you have to do to become a deacon? What kind of education do you need?
Charity, the first thing I thought what I had to do is convince my wife that she should allow me to do this. Because in the Diocese of Des Moines, all the training to which I go through, my wife also accompanies me. And it's a roughly a 4.5-year process. And one weekend a month, we would spend down in Northwest Missouri at Conception Abbey taking courses down there. That's a Benedictine Abbey. And then also one Saturday a month, we would take classes and do some spiritual work up here in Des Moines. And that was about 4.5 years worth of formation prior to being ordained.
And she had to do all of this preparation with you because why?
You know what? That's a question I heard in our living room a couple times, too. Charity, the reason why, and it makes sense as we look back, what Bishop Pates here really believes is as the deacon candidate goes through this process, you really go through a transformation, a formation of you spiritually, but also in the way you look at a lot of things in life and how you deal with and how you see situations. And it's important for the wife to go along, too, to see these changes and to hopefully experiencing them themselves, because the last thing you want to do is have a situation where the wife may not be making that journey, and after 4 years, she takes a look and says, what in the world happened to that guy I married? And, you know, the diaconate and the service to God should not be in any way a conflict. It should not have any sort of edge in that marital relationship, because for us, marriage is a sacrament. So that's the reason the wife comes along.
And how much of your time do you devote to being a deacon now?
You know what? I honestly wish I had more time to devote to it. Right now, you know, in my schedule with the legislature going on, I'm limited to maybe a couple evenings in the weekends. But when the legislature's not in session, Charity, I have the ability to do that almost on a daily basis, and it's an absolute joy.
Do you get paid by the church?
You know what? We often joke about that. I don't get paid in terms of a check or monetarily, but Charity, I tell you what I get, what I receive, what I receive by being able to help with folks, interact with folks, is absolutely priceless. You couldn't put a dollar amount on it.
Can you describe for us? Can you explain for us why you felt you were called to be a deacon?
Sure. You know, I think everybody thinks when someone is called to a vocation, somewhere they're taking this walk, you know, through this idyllic forest, or I'm by a pond skipping rocks or something, and then there's this, you know, shaft of light that must shine down on you in an angelic choir, and a deep voice says, Jim, you are a deacon. You know, Charity, it just doesn't happen that way. It's a longer process. For me, it was 7-8 years process of mulling through in my mind. I got this kind of feeling that I wanted to get closer to God and help him serve his people and just draw closer to that incredible mystery that was pulling me. And I just kept exploring it. And I'll admit, I think like a lot of folks in clergy and in religious life, we said, maybe that's just what hit me that day or something. But it kept gnawing at me, gnawing at me in a good way, to where a wonderful priest friend of mine here in Des Moines, I sat down and had a conversation with him, and he looked me square in the eye and said, Jim, have you thought about the diaconate? And I had to admit that, yeah, I'd been beating that idea around in my head for about 4 or 5 years. And he says, do you think maybe somebody's trying to tell you something? And Cherry, that's how this journey started many, many years ago.
I want to get back to the phones. Bo is on the line in West Des Moines. Hi, Bo.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I just wanted to address a couple of things I'd heard this morning. First of all, I appreciate your show, just talking about these issues. I think going back to the issue of young priests or getting priests and more people interested in the priesthood, I just really believe from research my wife and I have done that the dioceses that we see that seem to have more priests entering the priesthood or young candidates entering the priesthood are those that have really towed the line with regard to church teaching. What I would consider a conservative Orthodox diocese, those all, some people might seem to think they're the most restrictive, but they tend to have the most vocations coming out of them. And so I think when we talk about the priesthood, that it needs to be heard from the altar. It's not a, the Catholic Church is not an easy faith, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bad faith. I mean, it's just very clear. I'm a convert to the church, so I'm not raised in the Catholic Church, but after I was married, gosh, we're coming up on 27 years, I converted to the Catholic Church. And part of the reason was it's just a very black and white, you know where you stand. It does not mean it's easy, but you don't have to guess where you're at. I think sometimes people look at the local church in a particular building, a particular parish, and they say, oh, well, I heard this from this clergy, or I heard this from this administrator at the church, so of course it's got to be true. And that's just not right. It's just not how it is. I think you have to look straight to Rome, or from the Roman Catholic Church. You have to look to Rome for guidance and for instruction. And it's there. And again, it's not an easy faith necessarily, but it's so rewarding and so fulfilling. And to me, the diocese, again, that really toe the line on some issues that you might call hot button issues with abortion or homosexuality or ordination of women, any of these things. The church has all this information on all of those issues. It brings us back, again, to a black and white place. That does not necessarily mean that it's an easy decision, but it sure does make it clear. And to me, that's such a huge part of why I continue to choose to be Catholic.
Bo, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us today. And Christy, you were nodding your head when he was talking about how so many of the new priests come from these more Orthodox parishes. And that's something that we see consistently?
Yeah, I think sociologists have done a lot of qualitative research as well as quantitative research. And the data is showing, for better or worse, whatever side we are on this issue, that both young men entering seminaries, it tends to be the more conservative, you know, more towing the line, as Bo put it in his put it well. And we see this also with orders of women religious. It tends to be wherever we think about this, or you know, we are the more conservative convents, monasteries that are tending to draw more.
That's fascinating. And Sister March Clark, again, I want to return to you because I know that you have a more progressive idea for the Roman Catholic Church in the United States, and I'm hearing a lot of push and pull here. If more of the young priests, if more of the young nuns or monks are coming out of these more Orthodox orders, that sounds like something that creates some conflict within the church.
I don't know about that. I don't know about it creating conflict. I do want to say a little bit more about the priesthood and the lack of young people going
sure.
into the priesthood. In talking with a number of people, I've been hearing more and more that, you know, there's a role for parents and for parishes in pointing out and witnessing to the good and rewarding aspects of the life of a priest. And I don't think that's happening. I don't know very many families that at this point are witnessing or asking or suggesting to their young people that this is a good life. This is something to consider. I think that's happening in terms of religious life for women as well as for the priesthood or diaconate or any of that. I'd also like to go back to some discussion of the diaconate. And I think what Jim was saying is very interesting and very powerful for me because I think it's much of what he was saying does not require someone to be an ordained deacon. And I guess as I look at the church in the future, I think what we need to be doing is looking at, okay, what are the needs of the church? What are the needs of ministers, for ministers within the church? And then looking to what are the best ways to get the best people to fulfill those ministerial roles? And it may or may not be through the diaconate and priesthood. I think we're at some real transition times. And I hope that there's some openness to thinking about that.
And when you say may not be through the diaconate or the priesthood, what alternative routes are you hoping to see?
I think a lot of roles for the laity being more recognized. There are a lot of lay people who are not deacons who are doing many, many of the things that Jim talked about already. And to recognize that as being a ministry within the church.
And are you also hoping to see more roles for women to be active in the church?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think there are many women doing a lot of, there are many women across this nation who are pastoral associates, who are doing administration of parishes, who are doing everything that doesn't require priesthood within a parish setting, and have been for many years.
Sister Marge Clark, thank you so much for talking with us today. Sister Marge Clark is with Network, a progressive Roman Catholic social justice lobby in Washington, D.C. And we are nearly out of time. I want to give everyone an opportunity. We may not have the time for this, so try to keep it very brief. But everyone an opportunity to tell me what, at this point, do you think the most crucial issue for the Catholic Church in Iowa is moving forward? And I'll start with you, Father Ken Anik.
I believe in terms of going back to ministry, what we do is that it's framed a little differently. So often it's been framed by what you can't do, like the vows. You can't get married or you can't own your own car or so on. In that the church is framed by what it offers you, what you can do. It's a whole different way of loving, a whole different way of caring. And I think that's very much what we try to do here at the college, is to see that it offers a lot of freedom to grow, both spiritually and personally.
Father Ken Anik, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Father Ken Anik is a professor of counseling psychology at Divine Word College in Epworth, Iowa. And Jim Obradovich, what do you think the key issue is for the future of the Catholic Church in Iowa right now?
The biggest issue, I think, is how do we get enough folks out there to serve all the needs of the people out there, whether it be spiritually or whether it be those basic needs? It's a big, big job. You know, it's a giant vineyard, as they would say, and we need a whole lot of folks to help us harvest.
All right, Jim, thank you. Jim Obradovich is a deacon for Holy Trinity Church in Beaverdale, Iowa. Monsignor Larry Beeson, Vicar of Retired Priests, what do you think the key issue is right now?
I was in Rome when Pope Paul VI was elected pope, and I remember him talking initially about the fact of service in terms of leadership and leadership in terms of service. And so I'm echoing what has been said before about the fact that if we serve our people, that's exactly what we need to do and get people to understand and realize that following the Lord, that's what it means, is that we serve one another.
Monsignor Larry Beeson, Vicar of Retired Priests in the Des Moines Diocese, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And Christy, you get the final word today from a little bit of an outsider's perspective.
Sure,
what is the key issue?
Oh, I think all the issues that have been raised have been wonderful. I'd like to touch a little bit on what Sister Marge and Father Kenneth said. I think it's really, really important for the church in Iowa and the United States to really focus on acculturation, as was brought up, sort of respect for cultures, and how to make a seat at the table for a lot of different people, not the smaller church, as the Pope Emeritus was trying to create. Also, I think empowerment for laypersons, Sister Marge had talked about that. Iowa's been home to the Curcio movement and a lot of the offshoots, sort of these weekend spiritual retreats my forthcoming book is focused on. And I think that Catholicism in Iowa has been very successful because laypersons have been really involved in the life of the church.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Christy Nabhan Warren is an associate professor of religious studies at the University of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Sarah Bowden, Emily Woodbury, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Technical support today from John Pemble. You can email us anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.